whole lot of the unemployed are continuing to collect.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's The Morning Open. Good morning, I'm Steve Chiatakis. A House vote on health care is in the cards. That's coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Numbers are mixed right now. The S&P and NASDAQ barely lower. The Dow up by about 18 points, 10,752. European shares pretty much flat as well. And in Asia, markets were off today. The Nikkei lost about 1%. There were fewer laid-off workers looking for jobless benefits last week. New unemployment claims fell by 5,000. But interestingly, the number of people who continue to collect unemployment went up. That's sounding a few alarm bells among economists who say there's not much of a recovery without new jobs. Diane Swonk is chief economist at Mesirow Financial. She's with us live this morning from the windy city of Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So fewer jobs are being created, but there has to be a lot of jobs opening up. I mean, where are these jobs?
Well, we've seen through the entire recession, healthcare sector has seen jobs grow. And also we're starting to hire census workers, although we're seeing many of those postal workers take furloughs on their jobs and jump into those census worker jobs. So I'm not sure how many of the census worker jobs that we're creating are actually pulling people off the unemployment lines, which is what we'd like to see.
Those census workers are temporary, though. Those aren't permanent jobs.
No, they're not permanent jobs. They're a much needed bridge. We hope to reengage workers that have been laid off for quite a while. And at the moment, instead, they seem to be, some of them at least, are being picked up by existing government workers, which are close to the process.
And where else? I mean, where else are we seeing some robust job growth?
Well, robust job growth is sort of an oxymoron. There is not robust job growth anywhere in the U.S. economy, but we are likely to see, as a result of the financial reforms, some new hiring, believe it or not, in the financial sector. We're going to see whole boutique industries grow as firms try to deal with the financial reforms, adapt to the financial reforms, and also make new bets on what they want to be when they grow up, when Goldman Sachs no longer wants to be a bank holding company,
for instance. This is a sector that, you know, almost brought the whole economy down, and they're going to be hiring people as we go forward.
Yeah, believe it or not. They're going to be hiring a lot of consultants, not a lot of full-time workers, but they're going to be staffing up to deal with not only the new requirements, but also to place new bets and to figure out, you know, where they're going to operate in the financial sector going forward. This is one of the great ironies, is sometimes some of the biggest places where you see destroyed workers, destroyed jobs, you sometimes see them created again, although in a whole new iteration.
Interesting point of view. Diane Swonk in Chicago, we thank you.
Thank you.
Next week, the Senate will begin consideration of the financial overhaul bill proposed by the Connecticut Democrat Chris Dodd. One highlight of the bill is a proposed Consumer Financial Protection Agency that's supposed to guard against abusive lenders. But as reporter Brett Neely tells us, the bill may not be tough on some lenders as it is on others.
The payday loan industry lends small amounts at very high interest rates. The loosely regulated industry doesn't have a sterling reputation.
It used to be the purview of mob loan sharks.
That's Lauren Saunders from the National Consumer Law Center. She says payday lenders are the perfect definition of what consumers need protection from.
We're now seeing payday lenders targeting people with unemployment benefits, you know, to offer them payday loans.
But in Dodd's draft bill, only large payday lenders will be overseen by the new agency. First, it will have to define what large means. That could take a year once the agency gets off the ground, says Ed Mirzvinsky at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group.
And in a year, you can make a lot of money ripping people off.
He says the payday lending industry actually came out badly in the bill writing process because there's a path to regulation. Mirzvinsky says stockbrokers and other groups managed to water down the draft to the point where it only orders studies rather than new rules for their businesses.
And the study is going to be just one more dead forest of trees that is going to say the same thing all the other studies have shown.
Which is that the groups need tougher regulation. Steve Schlein, a Payday Lending Association spokesman, told me the industry likes things the way they are. Currently, states regulate payday lenders.
And there's no federal need to regulate us. The federal government should focus on the industries that cause the economic meltdown.
He says the association plans to keep fighting Dodd's bill as it makes its way through the Senate. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, March 18th, 2010 at marketplace.org. The big drug maker Pfizer reportedly is looking to buy German generic drug maker Stada. That's because today Pfizer lost out on a $1 billion bid for another generic company, Radiopharm. Now, Pfizer's big in the brand name medication market, but the move shows the company is looking to diversify. Marketplace's Gregory Warner has more from the health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia.
If Pfizer wins the bid, it'll enter the European generic drug market in a big way. Les Fundleiter is a healthcare analyst at Miller Tabak.
The strategy is to diversify their revenue base because developing new drugs is difficult and often fraught with failure.
Many Pfizer blockbusters like Viagra and Lipitor are losing patent protection and will have to compete against generics. Tom Getson is a health economist at Temple University in Philadelphia. He says drug companies may be shifting from having one branded drug to owning many generic drugs in one category.
It frankly doesn't make any difference if you have a patent if you control every single cholesterol drug, because you control that market.
In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
The U.S. ambassador to China today ramped up a simmering trade dispute. In a speech to Beijing University students, Ambassador John Huntsman said China's currency policy has been hurting global commerce for a while now. But publicly complaining about the dispute inside China's borders may have turned up the burner even more. Marketplace's John Dimsdale is with us in our Washington studio to talk about it. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Steve.
So why is the U.S. heating things up now?
Well, for one thing, there's more international support for the U.S. position. Europe and Latin America are still having trouble recovering from the recession, while China's economy is booming. And normally that would make China's money, the yuan, a lot stronger. But China tightly pegs the yuan to the dollar, and that makes it harder for those exports to compete. So other countries are angry now about China's currency, and the U.S. might be feeling that it has some reinforcements on its side.
What's China's reaction, John, to this international pressure to change its currency?
Well, China's feeling its own domestic pressure over jobs, according to Tsinghua University economics professor Patrick Chovanec.
In China, exports are a very sensitive issue right now. In 2009, exports took a big hit. There was a drop in demand from the United States and from other global markets, and exporters were really hurting last year.
So Chovanec says China wants to use exports as its way out of the recession, which means they're very reluctant to jeopardize the competitiveness of their products with a stronger currency.
John, could this get even more heated?
Absolutely. Next month, in a regular report from Treasury, China could be officially added to the list of the world's currency manipulators, and that's not going to sit well in Beijing.
Marketplace's John Dimsdale in Washington this morning. John, thanks.
Thank you.
Foreign car makers are invading Britain to make new low-carbon green vehicles. Nissan announced today it'll produce its futuristic electric car named the Leaf in England starting in 2013. And also today, Ford Motor Company won almost $500 million in loan guarantees from the British government to make green cars. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports on the country's green automobile dreams.
Ford makes half of all its diesel engines here, and the British government's determined to protect that investment and promote greener transport. Under the deal unveiled today, Ford will be helped to develop low-carbon emission gas engines. Britain's aim is to turn itself into a world leader for green vehicles. Professor David Bailey is with the Coventry University Business School. He says cutting carbon emissions is the way forward for the auto industry.
Once the world economy recovers again, we'll see high oil prices and from here on in, high energy prices. So we need to shift towards much more fuel efficient, low carbon vehicles anyway in terms of energy independence.
The Japanese car company Nissan is also getting help from the British government. The company now plans to build its mass-market electric car, the Leaf, in the UK, the first time it'll be manufactured outside Japan and the US. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer today said it looks like the vote on a $940 billion health care bill could come this Sunday. Health care, of course, has dominated the agenda on Capitol Hill, so we've forgotten about other things, such as climate change. By the end of the month, three senators, the Democrat John Kerry, Independent Joe Lieberman, and Republican Lindsey Graham, could put together some sort of legislation that could include a sweetheart deal for big oil. Here's Marketplace's Elisa Roth.
The three senators aren't ready to talk specifics yet. But it looks like the bill could let oil companies off the hook for carbon emissions. And instead, gas would be taxed, and we'd pay for it at the pump. Tom Kloza is chief oil analyst at the Oil Price Information Service. He says oil companies and their home states would obviously love this. But
the problem is that politically, raising a tax on anything these days, particularly gasoline, is probably a very, very difficult task.
Kloza and others say it doesn't matter if oil companies pay directly for their carbon emissions. They just pass the cost on to us anyway. Sander Cohan is at ESAI, an energy consulting firm.
A fee at the pump really is much more transparent. This translates directly through to an ultimate gasoline price.
It's too soon to talk about the mechanics of such a tax, but it would probably be pegged to the price of carbon on the open market, which means it could fluctuate. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
And finally, we've learned even the most formal halls of the Ivy League can loosen up just a little bit. A Yale University journal called The Green Bag created some bobblehead dolls for the law school's library. Likenesses of a dozen current and former U.S. Supreme Court justices, William Rehnquist and Sandra Day O'Connor, to name a few. A librarian told the New York Times, 100 years from now, if someone wants to study the bobbleheads, where will they go? Well, I think that question's been answered. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.